Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love Junior Mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, you don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
You know what? Believe it or not, that's a few years ago now. And that team didn't work out, and I think I know why. Never tell a team it's second-class anything. You can't do that to a team.
A bad message.
How didn't
to
I
send.
Know to yeah. avoid that?
Yeah.
You walk in the door and like, here we go, second-class candy. The player's like, what? Second class? Thanks. Wow. Really? Obviously, you have a lot of respect for our talent. That was doomed from the get-go. Welcome back. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. Happy Friday as we kick off Labor Day weekend. With us now is a friend of mine from a few years ago, Jim Coventry of RotoWire. RotoWire has been generous enough to lend us its talent throughout the football season Friday afternoons, and that includes Jim, who should know, if he doesn't already from having talked to Adam and Jared, that Jim, so Bulldog and myself are playing golf tomorrow on the heels of a main event draft with Adam Krautwurst and Jared Smola. And Bulldog claims to not even know that there was a draft because he's not a fantasy player, really. But, you know, I guess we've roped you in.
I love claims. Like, you invited me. You said, do you want to play golf on whatever date, the 5th of September
yes.
In Rochester? I'm like, yeah. That was the invite. So how was I supposed to know? I claimed to know there wasn't a fantasy. You didn't tell me there was a fantasy
draft. Don't you hear the name Jared Smola and just assume that there's a draft? Come on. Jim, you there?
Is Jim there?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I told you, letting you guys chop it up about Jared and the draft.
That was our lead-in.
Sounds like a great time.
It was your intro, sure. Jim. Get with it here.
It was your cue.
Yeah, I love that. I was waiting for a couple more legs of the story. It was getting interesting. Right. But, yeah, good luck in the draft. A little draft prep, and we're ready to roll.
No, it really was pointless. It had nowhere to really end. It probably should have never begun, but that's how we do it.
I just wanted to tell Jim that I was going to see Jared and Adam tomorrow. Because you know those guys.
And introduce me to both of these men. I've not met either of them.
Yeah, because you go back with Draft Sharks, right, Jim?
Yeah, back from 2008 to 2016, and then went over to RotoWire. But, yeah, it was a great time working with the crew at Draft Sharks. Just a great group of people, great product. Love those guys.
So here we go. I mean, I guess maybe I can't get away with saying any longer that, like, here's draft season, because it's probably mostly over at this point. Would that – I mean, there's got to be some action here this weekend.
I think a lot of local leagues are drafting.
Home leagues?
In the days, yeah, like your smaller.
Plus our
stuff.
Thing tomorrow that I just forgot about suddenly. you know, what has been for you, Jim, like a story or two of the off season this year that stands out as you look back on it?
You know, the biggest thing, and this is going to impact real football more than it'll impact fantasy, but it will have a trickle-down effect. It's that the usage of extra tight ends is going to be a thing. And I remember before the preseason, people were saying, well, the Rams use three tight ends 30% of the time. I go, well, that's true, but it's a lie. They didn't start until week 9 last year, and they were using it 46 to 50% of the time. And they used it until they had injuries at the end of the season. But the point is this. This year, teams are going to use a second tight end more than ever. The teams have something they're trying to get a third one on the field. So what does that mean? Well, it means one receiver is on the field when you have three tight ends. So you're going to see less wide receiver snaps. Puka Nacua was down to 62% of the snaps while they were playing those sets. So this is going to have a trickle-down effect that nobody really sees coming. The slot position is dying out fast. Slot snaps were at the all-time low. So we're going to – the way we watch football is going to be very different. And the impact on fantasy football, we're going to see more tight ends than ever have – some production, and maybe in deeper leagues, it's worth drafting some of those later tight ends and flexing them instead of a moderate wide receiver.
How much, if at all, do you think that impacts the top tight ends? Like, because if there's three of them on the field, I guess a guy like Bowers is going to get whatever he's going to get. Like, he's going to be a target and, you know, really the center of the passing offense, I would assume. But it makes sense to me that if there's extra tight ends, that they'll get targets, and maybe the main guy that you're counting on in drafting the earliest might get, penalized for that.
So typically in the three tight ends, one is a blocker. At most, he'll leak out for a screen pass to have a little threat there, but he won't be designed. The second tight end is an in-betweener. He can block. He can go out for routes. So I think that one replaces the slot receiver. So some of the slot production, that'll replace that. But a lead tight end who's already a receiver that we've seen, those roles are pretty secure because their snaps actually go up. But I think, again, those secondary targets just don't go to a wide receiver. The secondary targets go to an extra tight end, which raises those secondary tight ends. But I think the primary ones, their roles are largely unchanged.
Jim, if you don't mind, while we're here, let's pivot to the Bills. And they're a team that loves their three tight ends. Jackson Hawes was primarily that blocking tight end last year, only caught 16 passes. Knox caught 36. Kincaid caught 39. Obviously, they're looking, I would think, to get Kincaid more into the 70s. I think the other guys maybe stay about where they are. What are you doing with Kincaid this year? Because it's been a pretty smooth summer for him, which is not something you could say the last two summers.
Right, and as well as your market knows this, back in May, the team was talking about limiting Kincaid's reps.
Right.
They've gone off of that completely now. Now it's like he's healthier. Now, what does that mean? Because there were games he was seeing 35% of the snaps. Like you said, injury maintenance for sure. So now are we talking 55 or 60? And I don't know if it gets higher than that, but it's huge if he does, because one out of three catches for Dalton Kincaid were for at least 20 yards last year. That's how dynamic he is. And he is a skeleton key for offenses. So, yes, him increasing that role and being healthy, it elevates the offense. But I'm going to segue off for a minute. I can't speak enough of DJ Moore. And I don't know how your Buffalo fans are feeling about DJ Moore, but I think he could not be in a better spot. Last year in Chicago, he was playing under Ben Johnson, and Ben Johnson didn't use him, 85 targets. And I tried to figure out why, and then I realized it. Ben Johnson wants a precise route runner. You are on this blade of grass at this second. Well, that's not DJ Moore's game. He's open every play, but he's more freelance. Talk about a perfect fit with Josh Allen. Does Josh Allen really care if you're on this blade of grass at the time? And if a play breaks down and Josh Allen is running around the backfield, DJ Moore is getting vertical, diagonal. This is going – Buffalo fans, you are going to love DJ Moore, and he is going to have an insanely good season for you.
I've liked this take. I've heard you make it on your shows. And really, DJ Moore, for me in my head, is a ping pong match where you have – I mean, there are a lot of naysayers when it comes to this player. His age, Scott Barrett, for one, namely, is like, yeah, I think he's washed. Maybe not. I mean, we don't know. But, you know, it's kind of been a really interesting back. And one of the more interesting players in fantasy this year for this is DJ Moore, I would say, because, I mean, all those guys in the first round, mostly, unless it's like McCaffrey, because of his age, is pretty much, you know, a straight line. Like, everybody loves him. It's just a matter of ranking them. And, you know, James right. Cook, Jim, is in that class. I mean, he's a first-round pick or early second at the latest this year. Are you on board?
Yeah, James Cook is one of the safest running backs. Obviously, you're going first and second pick, Bijan and Gibbs, in any order you like them. But after that, you could really make a case that the next running back should be taken after a few wide receivers, and it might be James Cook. Because like you said, McCaffrey, age, his rushing ability declined. I mean, he had 100 catches, but all that work, and now he's older. Jonathan Taylor fell to 3.3 yards a carry in the games Daniel Jones missed. He's coming back from an Achilles, and he always misses at least five games a year. James Cook is just sitting there, and it's like, you know what? He got paid last year. He finally got the 300 touches. Even though they lost David Edwards, the left guard, this is still a really good offensive line. And so James Cook is as safe as they come once you get past about six picks in your draft.
Yeah, and add into that he's not a guy that gets hit square a lot. Like, I can't recall him taking a huge hit. I mean, I'm sure he's gotten hit. He's a running back. But, like, he's got that ability to kind of just, I don't know, it just kind of feels like it misses him. You know, I can't think of a situation where he got, you know, like Wile E. Coyote'd or anything.
Maybe Denver in the playoffs was the fumble, maybe a play like that. But your point is valid. I'm not trying to at it by saying that. Just thinking of that as you're talking. So you want to go as high, and you're Robinson over Gibbs, I think. You want to go as high as RB3 for Cook?
So, full disclosure, if in a 12-team league, O'Marrion Hampton goes about pick 15. And if I'm picking about pick 10 or so, I can play chicken on Hampton, and I could think I could, in many drafts, I'll get Cook at 10. Sometimes he'll fall there, sometimes he won't. And so if I could get Cook, and then coming back around, if I can get Hampton, I have Hampton actually ahead in terms of what I think he'll score. But because of the draft strategy that I think I could get both at the end of the first round and into the early second round, that's how I tell my listeners to view them. But I do think Hampton has incredible upside. Hampton was actually an outstanding outside runner last year with no blocking, coming off a broken ankle, and he is in like the mother of all systems for him in Los Angeles now with Mike McDaniel. So I do think that Cook will finish as a running back 4, but as I said, depending where you're drafting, I would draft him as a running back 3. Sounds weird. I hope you get the logic on that.
I do for sure. And you also have in there Chase Brown and Kenneth Walker, who are and Devon Achane as well, popular picks in that same range. Until recently, and maybe this is still mostly true, but so was Ashton Jeanty. But now you've got some concern over his health going into the opener. I don't know, Jim. Like, I'm not worried about it, but if you draft a lot, this time of year is kind of fun because you see, I mean, Jeanty went into the third round last night in one draft I was watching. You get that sort of sometimes, not always, but sometimes overreaction to injury news.
You're right, and the news has not been definitive, but every tea leaf you get is saying it's a low ankle sprain, which means he's going to be fine. Those don't linger once they heal. So if that's the case, we're looking at a player we were taking in the first round before the injury, and I know Mike Washington had a great preseason, and so I think maybe some people are worried now this is more of a timeshare. But in those first two preseason games, half of Mike Washington's runs were useless. They were negative to positive 2 yards, which keeps the offense off schedule. So if he's going to be a boom or bust runner, he's not going to get this massive workload. Jeanty's going to be the guy because Jeanty not only will give them the big plays, but he'll keep them on schedule. So Jeanty is a screaming steal in drafts because people just have made up these narratives and they're following them. And I just don't think there's a lot of merit behind burying Jeanty on a low ankle sprain.
With Jim Coventry of RotoWire, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR.
His name has already come up here, but just what do you think of Walker in Kansas City? Like, because we've seen the Bills morph into this run-heavy team, and Cook led the league in rushing last year. The Chiefs with Mahomes, you know, coming off an injury, and they had nothing for a run game last year. I could see them getting into like the idea of like, okay, let's become more like a 50-50 thing here because they now have a real stud back there.
You might be right on that. And I still think Andy Reid, how much is Andy Reid going to change his stripes? Yeah, they're going to run some, and he has had LeSean McCoy in the past, and they've had a dynamic game. I think Walker is the most interesting player in the first two rounds of your drafts because in theory, if it works out in Kansas City and he catches the ball, and that's what they're talking about. Now, in 2024, in only 11 games, Walker had 46 catches. If that's the pace he gets in Kansas City, 4 catches a game, he is going to come close to helping you win your league. But here's the problem. In his time in Seattle, he could never separate Kenneth Walker from Zach Charbonnet. Charbonnet got half of the work because Walker never proved to be able to move the offense on schedule. Yeah, the big plays are great. I don't use this number to statistic frequently, but I think it's important. Kenneth Walker had what we call a 25 percentile success rate last year. And what that means is he has so many runs that are of 0, 1, or negative yards. The offense is in a hole because what he does is he dances around looking for a hole. And if the hole doesn't develop, instead of taking the 2 or 3 or 4 yards that he would have gotten by running straight, he all of a sudden puts the team in a hole. And I think when Andy Reid, unless they could get him, Walker, to change his game and get immediately downhill, I think it's going to get really frustrating for the coaching staff, and they're going to probably end up doing what Seattle did, Walker in a timeshare they didn't expect.
Yeah. You make a really good point about Reid. Like, going back to his time in Philadelphia, I feel like I remember, like, he can't help himself. He's just got to throw. He's got to throw. You know, and at the time, that was held against them because Philly, you know, for the NFC championships, they could never get there and close the deal. Now that he's won in Kansas City, it's just sort of like, you know, he's exalted genius man. So we'll see where that goes.
With Jim Coventry of RotoWire, for all the drafts I've done, maybe it's around 100 this year. Last year was more, by the way, before you go make a face, Bulldog. So I've cut back. I don't think I've seen a single one where Josh Allen wasn't the first quarterback. There really is just like no debate about that. And sometimes it's like three rounds or even four rounds later where the second one goes. How do you feel about that, Jim? I mean, I don't think it's worth debating whether he should be quarterback one because it seems unanimous. But I never get him almost because like I just don't want to pay the price if I can get, you know, close to the same kind of quarterback production a few rounds later.
You're exactly correct. And what happens is when you're in these leagues and you draft Allen in the third round, all of a sudden you find yourself chasing at running back or wide receiver because you missed out on one of the premium ones. And I would rather chase chase a quarterback because I have options. I have a lot of options later that I like. Yeah, Allen is the linchpin number one, but at what cost, like you said? And I know a lot of people have been successful drafting a quarterback early. I just never feel my roster is good if I try that approach, and so I just don't do it. Now, Lamar Jackson, who you brought up, a three-round value because he was hurt last year, a hamstring, which he's never been a guy with soft tissue injuries. So that that ended up becoming knee, toe, foot injuries because he was limping around on a bad hamstring. So a three-round value, if Lamar Jackson is falling into the sixth round in your draft, at that point, that is a value you can't pass up.
I hope I have this right, and I'd like to put this in front of Bulldog too. I think if I were to ask you your favorite quarterback pick this year, it's Kyler Murray, isn't it?
It is. With Kevin O'Connell, and I'm going to point out a couple of things for you. First of all, Sam Darnold, who we left for being a non-factor ever in football because he was not good for many years, he goes into Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell's offense, and he throws for 4,300 yards and 35 touchdowns. It was – I'm sorry. Sam Darnold won Super Bowl. Give him credit, but it was Kevin O'Connell. The offensive tackles were great. The receivers were great. The schemed up plays were great. Kyler Murray is far better than Sam Darnold ever was walking in here. He was a league average quarterback, but everybody forgets that. And the durability, he had an ACL that cost him parts of two seasons, so we penalized him twice for the same injury. Kyler Murray has been, like I said, an average quarterback who played in a horrible Arizona system. Bad offensive lines. Cliff Kingsbury with the most predictable offense until Kingsbury improved in his next job. So, in my mind, if Kyler Murray is an average quarterback, even that, he has Jefferson, Addison, Hockenson, an offensive line, and he can run. I don't see how this goes wrong.
So, Jim, Josh Jacobs, on whatever day it was, last Sunday, I think is when I heard, driving back from Louisville, was commissioner's exempt list, and then everybody just decided to, that's that for Josh Jacobs, doesn't have a court date until November. Now, today, they announced that that court date is moved up 2 months. Even before they open, he'll be, in court. I guess that's the plan anyway. So, how have you ridden this ride with him?
So, yes. So my initial take when it was the November court date was he would remain on the exempt list until his court date. Now, that was an initial court date. That's really not the date things get done. We talked to Drew Davenport, a great friend who's a lawyer and understands this stuff, and he said the case would go on past that. So at that point, I'm like, well, don't draft Jacobs because you're probably not going to have him because if they give him a suspension, because the exempt list was not a suspension, it's paid. But then once they settle the court case, he could get the minimum six games, and you're looking season over. But now the fact the court date is September 10th or 11th, they just got a new post from Adam Schefter that said either of those dates. So the point becomes this. That had to be driven by Jacobs' legal team. They are the ones that had to get the court date pushed up because there's no way the legal system was doing that on their own. They had no reason to. So my guess is they may. This is fully a guess on my part. The legal team is probably going to try to get the case settled quickly. And then if it gets settled right away, and if the league, they're hoping the league isn't just the six games. If that happens, even if it's eight games, you could get Jacobs for close to half the season. And in that case, now I think once you're into drafting the handcuff running backs, I think you're drafting Jacobs just above those. Because if you got a half a season with fresh legs out of him, I think at that point, it would be way worth it.
You just have to get there. You can't afford to have a team where you have enough injuries and you can't hold on to them, right? You have to, any player who's injured like that, you've got to be hopeful that you can make it that long into the season. Jim, one player whose opinion I'm not sure I know of, in terms of what you think, DeJuan Stribling, another exciting player to talk about, argue about this summer, San Francisco rookie. Many thought overdrafted, but then he shows up in camp and preseason and is making waves. They lose Ricky Pearsall. Evans is hurt. It's always the way with San Francisco. How high is too high for him?
So he is going about 90-ish picks in the draft. So he's, you know, in the 12-team league, he's going in the 8th-ish round. And I think that that's a fair price. But here's what I'm saying. I was drafting Stribling in July before Pearsall got hurt, before training camp started. And my whole case was this. I said, Stribling is exactly, if you cooked up in a lab, what a Kyle Shanahan receiver would be. Big, super fast, can block, and can run with the ball in his hands. All those are like exactly what they need. And that's why they used the 33rd pick, traded up to get him in that spot. So he is a clear fit. I remember when they drafted Brandon Ayuk years back. Before everything went crazy, Ayuk was another one of those players that did really well in Shanahan's scheme. So I bought into that. But the bigger picture was this. Mike Evans is old, and he missed 12 games in the last 2 years. And I already said, Father Time has him in a chokehold right now. And then he in camp, he's missing time. And then Pearsall goes down. Stribling is in line to lead this team in receiving. Because Debo, they already said, is going to be in a part-time role, splitting a position. Stribling could not be in a better situation. So, yes, if he is going in the end of the 8th rounds in your draft, and if you really want him, then in the late 7th, not too early. Because Kyle Shanahan will get production out of a wide receiver.
There it is, Bulldog. You got that?
Stribling. I got it. I'm making note.
DeJuan Stribling. There's an apostrophe in there somewhere. Jim, thanks to you and your colleagues at RotoWire for being a part of our team this season. Look forward to talking again.
Thanks, Mike. Before I go, code WGR at RotoWire.com gets 50% off of our subscription. Whoa. It's massive. It's a great deal. We have all of our draft tools, our rankings to get you set up for winning your league. But again, WGR at RotoWire.com, 50% off.
You're run by a Buffalo guy, Tim. I mean, I've been in touch with him over the years, and I'm a big fan of the RotoWire content. So very good. Thanks again, Jim. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Jim Coventry of RotoWire with us. Theo Greminger, Ian Harditz, Jim Coventry, maybe a couple more of their many analysts will join us over the course of the season on Friday afternoons.
That's a pretty sweet little deal. So good.
Half off.
Yeah.
They have all sports, too. One thing about RotoWire versus some of the other sites we have guests on from is this is not just a football site.
Right.
So you got hockey coming up, Sneaky Joe's Dynasty League. Perhaps you're in that. You might want a little bit of guidance.
Probably not.
I'm in that.
Not that I wouldn't need guidance, but I'm not in that.
I definitely need the guidance. I'm not
a hockey
good.
Dynasty League?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm out. My portfolio is shrinking.
Evidently.
So let me check. Hang on. I got to refresh my screen here.
Completely
I got one, and I may even not participate in the draft.
Owen.
Co-manager.
Gord Stellick coming up after the update. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, welcome back. Happy Friday. With us now, this is cool. It's been a cool week. It's been a good week with these.
I agree.
With us now on the Western Hotline is Gord Stellick. You can hear Gord on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio's The Morning Skate, 7 a.m. Eastern, weekday mornings, channel 91. And, by the way, you can hear us on the SiriusXM app or on channel 175 if your car works really well. Check out SiriusXM.com/SportsPass for more details how to subscribe to SiriusXM's all-new sports plan. I want to talk about curling, but that seems like that would be really selfish because I met Gord at a curling event in Niagara Falls a few years ago.
Leading with that. Gord, do you remember this interaction? We were talking about it yesterday, and we didn't wager on whether you'd remember meeting him at a curling event. But
I would never be so bold.
The world awaits your answer, Gord.
I absolutely do. It's there's all kinds of great people, aren't there, at curling events. I know that's the same a lot of places, but I 100% remember it very, very well. And, you know, the other part, it's great that we have a partnership now on Sirius. I'll tell you, I've listened to GR for decades. Like, I am a Toronto guy, but Buffalo was my wheelhouse. So great being on board. And then great hearing NFL football starting because that means NBA and NHL and curling. We'll all get
that's it.
As well.
It's all happening.
Curling has all this new stuff. it seems, like the slam events and the Rock League and everything like that. But we can put that aside. From your perspective, Gord, as you know, we all in Buffalo just were kind of blown away by what happened with the Sabres last year. One question I've wanted to ask all our hockey analysts is just like, to what extent you might have seen it coming. I mean, we waited so long for just an appearance in the playoffs with the Sabres, and then you get that first place and game seven of the second round. Did you have any sense that that was on the horizon for them?
I would say almost zero. That kind of turnaround, like when you're working with a team, that's what you hope for, right? You're as a matter of fact, like all summer you sit there and you just think about the best case scenario if everything can go right. And that had not happened in Buffalo for a long period of time. And, you know, guys, that's why you play the games, right? Because things that happen that just don't make sense. And when I say that with respect because I liked how they were putting things together. But to have another season that's going down the tubes and then a light switch goes and it does a complete 180 like it did, it's so unusual. I was, hey, very happy for the fans, long-suffering fans. I don't like to see, you know, organizations with a history like Buffalo or any of them. You know, Toronto was it for a while, Detroit now. I mean, have that many years that you're out of the playoffs. So I always felt, they kept retooling again. I liked what I saw coming together, but I was stunned how it just seemed to do a 180 in the middle of the season.
It's hard not to be stunned, Gord, when the season begins. I mean, there was plenty. There was some analysis before the season that like, okay, you know, the decor, the goaltending will stabilize. They could be a wild card contender. But then the season begins and they're in last place and you're just like, okay, here we go again. And then the switch just flips. I mean, I think it's very hard not to be stunned, however into it you are and however deep you go on your analysis of the additions and subtractions in an off season. Once it began and they looked like the same old junk, it's very hard to expect it to turn around. In fact, it took the 10-game winning streak and then some, I think, for every, we were asking each other into March, like, are they good? Are they really good? And it's just, you know, the scar tissue is deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the one constant in any sport is if you get your confidence and all of a sudden, like, you believe you can do it and that. And, you know, teams will quite often say that, but they don't really mean it. And then to, you know, experience winning, get addicted to winning. And you know, there was that one game when I remember there were a few fights and you could see them in the penalty box. Yeah, we're kicking ass now. We're, you know, we won tonight and we're kicking their ass physically. And, wow, we can win all kinds of different ways. And it was kind of, you know, great to see them kind of grow, learn to win, mm-hmm. embrace winning, and decide that they can do it.
All that said, what do you think of their offseason? Because there were two, I don't know, Kingpin is strong, but like Tuck really mattered for them. Byram was a part of that top four on their decor that really ran the whole thing for Lindy Ruff. And they're both gone, and there is not a beard-growing, you know, 30-year-old in anybody's place. It's all kids. And so, I don't know, what did you think of their offseason?
Well, you know, you know, in Toronto last year showed when you lose a Mitch Marner, what it did for Vegas and what it did in the opposite way for Toronto. No, not single-handedly, but, you know, your elite players are huge in making that really important margin of difference. And I wouldn't compare them to Marner, those losses in Buffalo. They certainly, you know, Byram, they had to look at it in a kind of a businessy situation. They got futures back and they looked a year ahead as far as and maybe being a UFA or a contract they weren't going to sign. Tuck was a strange one. I just kind of thought it would come together, but they got something for him. So yeah, those are significant losses. But the biggest thing, you know, Mike and Bulldog is like that, this division. Like, you know, you may have made any team a couple strides last year, but the Atlantic Division. If you don't make the playoffs, you're going to be pissed off. Like, I mean, they're just is everybody coming full force. So that's going to be the toughest thing that, you know, you have that great year in Buffalo and, you know, you get back in the deep end of the pool in the playoffs. You do it at a time when the division as a whole has never been stronger.
Yeah, it might have been the best division ever that they won last year. And, you know, that's Toronto taking a step back. But, I mean, you had, what, five 100-point teams or 99-point teams? We have been trying. Gord, we don't have that much power, which is evidenced by the fact that we've not been able to convince anyone to move – the Sabres or even the Bills to like the southern divisions of sports. That seems like a much more comfier existence. It's just never gone over, never gotten off the ground, really, that idea. Connor Hellebuck, we've been spending more time this summer with the Sabres talking about a player who isn't on the Sabres, maybe, than anyone else. But this continuing speculation about Hellebuck, fueled by insiders continuing to mostly at least report that they think he still will be traded. And he's made that statement affirming that he wants to be. So if you were the Sabres, how hard would you want to go at him?
Well, I strongly, I don't know if that's the right word. I mean, I look at Buffalo and you see the example of, you know, Dominic Hasek and Ryan Miller and what that means, okay? So among many things last year, the goaltending was certainly up to snuff, but to have a guy, then there's very few of those guys anymore. They're just, you know, because a whack of them retired, the Lundqvist of the world and that. You just don't have a number of goaltenders that you put and say, okay, that is the number one. I mean, there's a lot more partnerships now and tandems and that. So I would think, and, you know, I don't know if leverage is going to come into play in the Sabres or another team's favor in getting him. It seems like Kevin Cheveldayoff has determined that, you know, he's got a certain price he wants to get in Winnipeg. But I just think that, you know, you got to go after this guy for the Buffalo Sabres.
Is anybody talking about him not showing up for training camp, or is it a little too early? Like, if nothing changes?
So he's going to go on vacation with Dylan Larkin. Is that it? They'll be in some island. It is the Wild West out there with the types of contracts that have been given out, the types of players that, like, you know, whether you look at Brady Tkachuk in Ottawa to Florida that have been able to demand and get a trade with term left on their contracts, and teams kind of realizing, you know what, it's better that we acquiesce that way than trying to be the hard asses. So those are going to be interesting questions about, you know, whether it's Larkin in Detroit or Hellebuck in Winnipeg. What is the tactic once training camp starts? So I'm going to wait and see what gives, but I think there would be a decent chance that they're not going to go to training camp. Then do the Red Wings and the Jets play, you know, hard asses and say, well, you know what, we're not going to trade you until you're in camp. So there's just a lot of stuff going on that's not usual in the off season.
Gord, how much, if at all, do you think it matters to the Sabres to get a big move into the boat? We already talked about Tuck and Byram leaving. I like the Zellweger bet to replace some of what Byram did for them style-wise. I think it might be a good fit there. It's a bet I would make anyway, but I already talked about how they didn't really do anything substantive to replace those guys. They're hoping for the kids to backfill. I wonder if a team that had 109 points and won the division to break a 15-season playoff drought should symbolically look like a team that's like, okay, look, we're doing this now because we're here.
And you made a good point too as well. You know, so they didn't backfill substantively, but they did in Zellweger and that, you know, get some quality. But no, the fans all like it. It's sexy, right? The big bold move. Love it. Talk about it. We love action. It should mean points. It should mean a Stanley Cup. No, exactly the opposite. Stay the course about whatever move, you know, the great teams are the ones that, okay, every move you make, if it makes you incrementally better and you make more moves that make you more incrementally better than a step back, that's how you get there. I mean, you look at the bricks that the Florida Panthers put together with all the different acquisitions and how it all came about, you know, while Barkov languished as a top young player for years out of the playoffs. So, no, I think Jarmo Kekäläinen is just the great right guy, kind of guy to be GM of the Buffalo Sabres. You do not. I mean, the one is the little one, like, say, the rare unrestricted free agent like Mitch Marner was for Vegas. Like, you can't go wrong with that because you're giving up nothing. But in other instances, no, you got to surround yourself with quality hockey people and make the best hockey moves based on that.
Gord, before you go, just a thought on the Leafs here. I think it's interesting, just, you know, in a vacuum, a team that was at where they appeared to be at would go and make the Bobrovsky signing, Darren Radish even. Like, they've acted, in my opinion, more like a team that was right on the cusp of the playoffs or even in the playoffs. But maybe that's the market a little bit, where I don't know how much patience anybody has there for, like, what would look more obviously like a rebuild. So what do you think of the Leafs at this point?
Yeah, well, when, you know, when you were talking about, we were talking about the Atlantic Division earlier. So you have the previous year's team that won the Stanley Cup, Florida, and the previous year's team that came first, Toronto, not getting in the playoffs last year. So about the bounce back on both sides. That was real. Just much as the switch went on in Buffalo, the switch never went on in Toronto last year, which almost was just as much of a surprise what went. And I unfortunately get the feeling that having made 9 consecutive playoffs the previous 9 years, that is over. You know, that is over as far as when we're talking Stanley Cup. And where you want to avoid getting is, I always think you got to be fish or fowl. You got to be in the deep end of the pool with a legitimate chance at the Cup, which they were for a number of years, or you got to be doing the rebuild, which, yeah, you can be a little long on the rebuild like Buffalo was and Detroit is right now, but, you know, that's the way you got to go. But because they have their next 2 years' first-round picks are not lottery protected and are been traded to Boston and Philadelphia, you don't have that alternative. So I don't know if they bounce. I mean, they should bounce back just based on, is Austin Matthews healthy? Is Tanev healthy? Do they get better goaltending? But then all of a sudden you get in that one, I think the worst place to be is the mushy middle. Then you get in that mushy middle that, okay, maybe you're good enough to make the playoffs, and then you can eliminate in the first round, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. So I'm intrigued to see, can they do a more significant bounce back or not?
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I mean, go get it or step back. And I think fans have more patience and understanding for that than ever before. Like maybe when you were GM, just going back 20, 30 years ago, I don't know. Like, I don't know if people were really ready to listen to, we're going to rebuild. But, you know, then at the same time, go ahead.
Yeah, I think owners weren't listening back then.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
if you share, like, you know, fans are not stupid, okay? Like, if you share what you're doing and they can see what you're doing, then I think that's the way to go and bring them in on it. Now, again, in Buffalo is an example. It carried on too long. But still, you know, fans will, you know, like to see. And if you share that with them, I think you can get that kind of patience. Like, you look with the Montreal Canadiens, you know, for example. So anyway, we'll see what gives. I think the key, though, right? Curling, hurry hard, right? Whatever you do,
hurry hard
right. is the credo for all 32 NHL teams. How about that?
Keep sweeping.
It does have to be hard to really back up if you've got Matthews still in his prime and Nylander still in his prime. Like, that's tough. I mean, it's one thing if those guys said, I want out now, sort of like Larkin and Hellebuck have done, then maybe that's different. Then you can maybe back the truck all the way up. I think it's hard to back it all the way up when you've got those dudes in their primes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you got to keep running at it. And you got to say, okay, you got to hope last year was a blip, and Buffalo fans have to hope last year wasn't a blip for the Buffalo Sabres. And
right. That's
what we'll see. Like I said, there'll be some great battles back to the good old days, when they're both, playoff contenders, expect to be in the playoffs, like the great rivalry really has been since the Sabres joined the league in 1970.
Right on. Listen for Gord Stellick on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, The Morning Skate, 7 a.m. Eastern weekdays, Channel 91. Thank you, Gord. This was really nice.
Well, great, and good luck to the baseball team, too. They've been developing real good players for Toronto Blue Jays fans as well. So always enjoy your show and enjoy the station.
Thanks very much again.
Very
have a great
say that, Gord. Thanks.
Labor Day weekend.
Yep. See you guys.
All right, Gord Stellick with us on the Western Hotline. That's labor with a U.
That's right. Yep.
Got to put that U in there. No I in team.
Or in labor. Either spelling.
Either country. That's right. Good point. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back after this timeout. This is WGR.